Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our probate specialist Elaine Byrne is here, ready to answer your questions about wills, inheritance, probate and all of the issues that go with them. You can email us today, cb@rte.ie, or text us 51551. Elaine, thank you very much for coming in. Will we get straight into it, because we have so many questions here for you to get through. So this first one: my brother willed me the family home many years ago with my sister given her lifetime to live in it. Now, she's suffering from dementia and she's in care. The house is in complete disrepair. What are my rights? What do you think?
Okay, thanks, Claire. So I think the listener's rights are going to depend on the type of right of residence. So it could be either a general right of residence, and in this case, the listener is entitled to possession. So he could do work on the house. He could carry out the repairs. Now, the alternative is that there's an exclusive right of residence, and this is akin to a life interest. So in this case, the sister alone would be entitled to stay in the house, and only on her death would it pass to the listener. So I suppose the difficulty in this circumstance is that she cannot consent to the listener doing anything. And maybe she has an enduring power of attorney, in which case her attorneys could consent to work being done. But I think if the listener checks the terms of the will, I think it's more likely, I think, that it's a general right of residence. And if that's the case, he can go ahead and carry out the repairs.
So a detailed look at the will, which was put together by the brother of this person, would probably answer these questions.
Exactly, Claire.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
My biological father is a widower. This is our next question. His adult children aren't aware of my existence. In the event of his death, where do I stand?
Okay, so there'll be a surprise here. So the listener is in the same position as the other children. So we have our Status of Children Act of 1987, and this equalised the status of all children, so irrespective of whether we're born inside or outside of marriage. So if the listener's dad, if there isn't a will, the rules of intestacy will apply. So the listener will get an equal share of the estate along with the half-siblings. Now, if there is a will, and maybe, for example, provision hasn't been made for the listener could contest it, maybe on the basis of what's called a Section 117 application. But just for the listener to bear in mind, so if the biological dad's name isn't on our listener's birth cert, then the listener is going to need to apply to the circuit court for a declaration of parentage, and DNA evidence is going to be needed for that.
Okay, and it sounds like, if possible, that person needs to have a conversation with her biological father about all of this.
I think so, even in terms of getting DNA. Yeah,
and it's probably likely to be difficult, but worth doing given the problems that could arise afterwards. Now, which specific High Court application do I make to process probate, as my mother died with dementia and this requires High Court approval?
Okay, so yeah, the specific application, I suppose the name has three variants. So it's an application to prove the will in common form, or an application to obtain liberty to apply for probate, or number three, an application to determine testamentary capacity. So these applications, Claire, they're made in the non-contentious probate list, so it'll be heard on a Monday. Now, there is an interesting case. It may be helpful for this listener. It was a decision. It was made by the High Court just last November, and it's called In the Estate of Margaret Stella O'Reilly. And the exact same circumstances applied, because on Ms. O'Reilly's death cert, there was reference to dementia. So an application then was made by her executors to have the will and testament proved in common form of law. So the judge then in that case, she heard all of the evidence and she found that, notwithstanding that dementia was referred to on the death cert, that Miss O'Reilly had the capacity to make her will. So the judge then went on to make an order admitting the last will and testament to probate, so the estate could be administered and all carried out.
Okay, so there are the three variants, as you said earlier on, that you would need to pick one of them to go and make this High Court application.
Yes, yeah. And provided that there's no objection, it should be straightforward. Yeah.
Okay, now our next one. Do my husband and I have to leave my daughter anything in our will? She's in a relationship, has a full-time job and is in her 30s. Our son is in his 20s and lives at home. Our daughter has threatened us, saying she will get what is hers. Do we need to leave her a minimum monetary sum to stop her pursuing this? So it sounds like what this person is saying is that both the parents don't want to leave this daughter anything.
Yeah. And look, Claire, that's, you know, that's their choice. So I think the listeners here, they don't have to leave the daughter anything. I suppose I think she should be mentioned and maybe even a token bequest to her, maybe even 5 or 10,000 euro, for example. And I think then on the face of the will, they might provide some explanation as to why they're making the wills as they are. And in addition, then it would also be helpful if the listeners were to provide a letter setting out as much detail as possible about their relationship with the daughter and I suppose the reasons why they're making just the nominal bequest to her. And this is because, so if the daughter, and she has indicated that she will, so if she is to challenge the will down the line, so possibly on the basis of a Section 117 claim, then the listener then through the will and through the letter will be given a voice. And I just think for this listener, just remember that a court is really, really slow to set aside a person's last wishes. So I think this person should go ahead, make the will and really try not to worry about the daughter's threats.
Is that good advice across the board to set out really clearly why you've made the decisions that you have made in order to avoid challenges down the line, Elaine?
Yeah, I think it is, Claire. I suppose the difficulty with a lot of these court cases is that I suppose the person, you know, the estate and the person whom it's affecting isn't with us. So if there's a letter like that, you know, it's evidence, I suppose, and it shows why the person made the will. So say for this listener, you know, they didn't make it on a whim. They put a lot of thought into it. You know, they can set out that she's in a relationship, she has a full-time job, and it just might prevent a lot of these court applications.
Yes, and this is the Section 117 claim that you tell us about regularly. This is the challenge that people can bring. But if you've set down your reasons really clearly, then the chances of that claim being successful, they're greatly reduced,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely, Claire. Yeah.
Okay, my father died 5 years ago, predeceased by my mother. My brother is the executor. Per my father's will, the house was to be sold and divided between all siblings and savings were listed, and the savings too, were listed and they were to be divided up also. So everything was to be split between the siblings. To date, no one has received anything at all. The house is not for sale and it's falling into bad repair. We've asked but we get no communication back. We're in need of this financial help now, as you can imagine. Do we have any rights? As an executor, does he have the right to do this, and should his solicitor not be advising him to the contrary? So this is 5 years on from the death of this person's father. Nothing's happened.
Yeah, so look, as you say, Claire, 5 years later, absolutely. I think the listener needs to take action now. So I suppose in general, an executor has what's known as an executor's year. So it's pursuant to Section 62 of our Succession Act. And so during this first year, a beneficiary can't say anything. But at this stage, certainly the listener, maybe the other family members need to put some pressure on the executor. I think it would be helpful if the other siblings join together because there is strength in unity. If the grant hasn't issued, they could look to the citation procedure. And this basically says that the brother is either going to have to act in the administration, take out probate, sell the house, or he's going to have to step aside. So this involves, it's an application to the probate office. The listener would lodge a caveat, 3 citations and a grounding affidavit. So in the affidavit, then the listener would set out that the father died, you know, 5 years ago and still there's nothing done. And I suppose just separately then, just it might be useful for the listener just to check that the house is insured in the meantime, because
is that easy to do, to check that whether there is insurance on the house or not when you're not the owner?
Yeah, I suppose ideally the brother would tell you. I would think if the brother hasn't done anything, I would be doubtful if the house was insured. So it might be, you know, if the listener here, the other siblings could try and organise it, maybe if they could contact the solicitor directly. Now, again, it is the executor who's the solicitor's client, but just insurance is so important to try and check.
Okay,
that.
But you can do something. It's 5 years on and you can move this process
absolutely.
Ahead.
Yeah.
We're a married couple without children and we live in Ireland. We made an Irish will leaving everything to each other 5 years ago. We jointly own a French holiday home, which is not named in the will. My question is, do we need to include this property in a new will or do we need to make a will in France?
Okay, so I think the general advice is to make a will in each jurisdiction, so in Ireland and France. And I suppose the main reasons for having separate wills in each country are, number one, because our law and tax treatment varies in both countries. But secondly, then, when it comes to the probate process, it's going to be easier because both probates will run concurrently. But just make sure that one will doesn't revoke the other. And then just another point to note is we have an EU regulation on succession law. And this regulation sets down that so a person habitually resident in one EU state can elect to have the succession law of that state prevail over the local law. So basically the listeners here can say they want Irish succession law to govern the inheritance of the French property.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the final point, Claire, and I suppose maybe not so much now, but certainly it came up during COVID, just was in relation to our physical presence. So we don't actually have to get on a plane and be physically present in France to complete a French will. So we could instruct our attorney in France to prepare the will, get advice as to the formal witnessing of the will, but we could actually then complete it here in Ireland. It's the Hague Convention on Private International Law is relevant.
Okay. Just on that succession law regulation, which you spoke about, so you can say, I want the succession law in Ireland to prevail over French law. Does that not mean that you can then say, I want my Irish will to be taken into account in France?
So, it's the same thing, I suppose.
But are you saying it's better practice to have the double lock of two separate wills in each jurisdiction?
Yeah, I think it's still better to have the two separate wills because I suppose otherwise, say if I pass away, my Irish estate will be administered, so that could take 2 years. But then I'm starting from scratch with my French estate and that could take another 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I have a will in each jurisdiction, it's going to be all wrapped up much quicker.
Okay. Now, this person says, I have no contact with my brothers and very little with my father. I married a girl years ago who had a child from a previous relationship. My family never approved and I was told I would not be included in the will. Have I any say in that decision?
So, well, look, I suppose, Claire, when we make our wills, you know, we have full discretion as to what we would like to happen to our property in death. And look, even if the reasons for our decisions are unreasonable or irrational. So look, the listener's father can exclude his son from his will. And I suppose for now, there's nothing that the son can do. Now, down the line, the son could seek advice about contesting the will. So going back to our section 117 claim, I suppose time has passed. I wonder, might the listener consider reaching out to his father and trying to build bridges, trying to sort things out now?
Mm-hmm. So he could take a challenge, but ultimately it is up to the father
it
what
is,
he wants to
yeah.
do with his house and whatever is left over when he dies.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to this one from the person who's not married and they're concerned about the name being on the deeds, because this is really interesting. This person has been paying a mortgage for 20 years. It's not paid off in full. We're not married. And I discovered my name is not on the house deeds. This was done because of tax implications, because the site was gifted to my partner by his parents. There were tax implications if the name went on the deeds at that time. And I just need to find where I am on the page because my screen has died in front of me. What are my rights? Now, this person paid the mortgage over the 20 years, but their name isn't on the deed, so they don't own that house, do they?
Yeah, I suppose I think, Claire, this listener is quite in a vulnerable position because I suppose if something happens to the partner, well, if he has a will, it'll pass to the listener under the will. But if he doesn't have a will, the listener won't have any automatic rights. Now, she likely has an equitable interest in the house in that she's paid the mortgage, but her name isn't on the deed, so no legal interest. So I would suggest that this couple make arrangements to put the house into joint names now. Now, they're not married, so as we always say, tax is a consideration. So the potential taxes, number one, capital gains tax, but there's principal private residence relief. Number two, capital acquisitions tax, there's dwelling house exemption. Number three, stamp duty, that's 1%. And just finally, there is a mortgage, so the consent of the bank will be needed.
Okay, so there's a lot to get through there for that person. Yes. Elaine, thank you so much for all of that valuable advice, as always. That's Elaine Byrne. And Elaine will be back with us in a couple of weeks. So if you have any questions that occur to you in the meantime, send them on to us, todaycb@rte.ie. In the headlines, Google is to cut 240 jobs from its Irish workforce, representing around 4% of Google's 5,500 Irish-based staff. And that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Today's programme was produced by Barbara Feeney, researched by Emma Cawley. Our broadcast coordinator was Louise Kerr-Ross, and Ruth Kennington was on sound today. And now it's over to Louise.